Kids, you can head back to junior worship now if you're headed back that way. Thank you again for all the volunteers who are back there every week to teach the kids back there. And ushers, if you'll get ready, we're going to go ahead and receive our offering. Pastor Kay is going to close out our Embrace the Drama series today in a few minutes right after our offering time. And, of course, today is Father's Day. So during our offering, we have a Father's Day video. How many of you dads have ever said, "You got this"? You use that expression? Some of us have used that expression, you know, "You got this, you got this." Well, this video reminds us of that. So let's be thankful for dads as we watch the video and receive our offering today.
You got this.
Daddy!
You got this.
A hug might be a good.
You got this.
Come on! You got this!
You got this.
Dear Jesus.
You got this.
I want to invite you into my heart.
Miss Douglas, they're ready for you.
Glad I get to wear a mask after that for a little bit. All right, let's go ahead and watch this.
Today, I found the truth.
In today's lesson, we will be speaking about Plato's allegory of the cave. In Plato's allegory, he talks about human beings living in a cave. All their life, from their childhood, they've been chained up in such a way that they cannot move their bodies, and all they can see in front of them is a dark wall. Because they have never been outside of this cave, all they know about life is this dark wall. However, one day, a slave is released, and he discovers a whole new world outside of the cave. And because he is now the enlightened one, his job is to come and free those that are still trapped in the cave.
Look, think about it like this. The front row consists of kings, bishops, queens, pretty much the people in charge of the country. The second row is made up of pawns.
The pawns are the least important and are pretty much what the leaders use to protect and benefit themselves. They're meant to be used for your own advantage.
Don't forget your red mask. Put it on. And now I pass you on to Carla with a segment on the terrors of Original.
Today, the truth found me.
Kids come into the world pretty authentic, pretty bare, willing to let their faces shine, willing to be themselves. But they soon learn that sometimes who they are, what they are, is uncomfortable. They do something wrong and they realize that I can't be that, I need to change. And so they learn to put on a mask. And sometimes they don't work. They learn to please because it's easier to please people and get along. And so they'll say cute things and be funny and make you laugh because they realize that they get their way that way. When we tell them to, say you're sorry when they do something wrong, they realize it's a lot easier just to say, I'm sorry. Yesterday, I heard those words, where the words were heard of like, your mouth is saying you're sorry, but your face is telling me you're not. And so Atticus is going to learn that he needs to change his face as well. Do you need to say you're sorry? Yes, you do need to. And it kind of helps change your inside. So there is a little bit of that as well. But we learn that we can put on masks. And it's easier just to put on a mask than to really address what's inside of us. The word personality, the personalities that we put on, as you saw in the video, they had different personalities. And they tended to hang out with personalities of the same type. If you saw the one girl went from one group, and she had her mask on, and as she approached the next group, she took off that mask, that personality, and became another person so she could fit in. But the word personality comes from the Greek word persona, which is stood for mask. And they would use different personas on stage in Greek theater. And so they would put on masks so you could know who they were. And so they would pretend. And even in doing something small like that, it could just be in giving you information, but I could also be putting on a mask of, look at how intelligent I am. I just learned Greek for a little bit. And I put on another mask as I'm up here on stage. The problem is, as I'm realizing, is that the more mask you put on, it changes how you see the world. Like, I can't see everything. Right now, that's kind of good because it kind of narrows my focus. But most of the time, it changes how we perceive things. As Frederick Buchner says, the original shimmering self gets buried so deep that most of us end up hardly living out of it at all. Instead, we live out of all the other selves, which we are constantly putting on and taking off, kind of like coats and hats against the world's weather. So what does it mean to be authentic? I think the basic, most simplest definition is taking off from mask, trying to expose ourselves to God, and we'll explore that a little bit today. As Eric said, we're wrapping up the series on our focus statement, kind of where Buffalo Valley Church of the Brethren, what we want to focus on. If you could read that with me. We commit to building purposeful community through the drama of the gospel of Jesus Christ. So we started with what is purposeful community? 7 weeks ago. We want to be a place where people feel in community, where they feel family, feel close. They have somebody they can connect with. And we want those communities to have these five words in them or involved with them in some way. And so Pastor Eric started off with discipleship, the D in drama. And basically, wrap up of that, Jesus said, follow me, be my disciple, you must follow me. And as he said, that is the hardest thing that we're going to do, is laying down your life, but it's also the easiest thing that you're ever going to do. He said, my burden is easy, my yoke is light. So discipleship. The next one, the R, was for reconciliation. Pastor Danita talked about how we need to reconcile the world to God, but also reconcile ourselves here in the church, personal relationships as well. And then the first A was ambassadorship. And we know that as we accept Christ and become part of the church, that we are his ambassadors. We represent God. We represent Christ to the world and the responsibility of that and how we need to work at being good representations. The last 2 weeks, we studied mission, the M in drama. The Hoovers talked about their missions trip, their mission work in Dominican Republic. And then last week, Pastor Eric again talked about mission, how are we using our resources for the world, reaching the world, but also even our mission right in our own family, in our own relationships, and in our community. And we're going to wrap it up today with authenticity. When I think of mask and authenticity, a quote from a very creative person centuries ago goes something like this: to thine own self be true, and it must follow as night the day. Thou canst not then be false to any man, to anyone. But before Polonius said that, and does anybody know what play that was? Our theater majors. What play was that set in? Okay, does anybody know who wrote it? Yes, it was Shakespeare. Good, all right. And it was in Hamlet. It's all about taking off, I can't tell the truth, so I'm going to put on a mask so I can tell the truth. Becoming another person. Shakespeare was all about that. And so this quote is kind of ironic coming from that. But even before Shakespeare wrote this, Christian teachers, and in the Bible we see that they were urging us to know God, actually. We have to know ourself. There's two sides of that. One is that to know yourself, you know that you're made in the image of God. So the more you know yourself, you're going to know God's image in you. However, we are fallen. We've made mistakes. And so there is a fallen part of ourself that we need to know as well. And it's often that part that we're trying to hide. But what happens when we hide a wound? What happens for sheep? Jesus calls us sheep. And a sheep is very good at hiding wounds. But what happens if it has a small cut that could easily be cleaned out and it would heal? But what happens when they lay down, their wool covers it, and they just sit on it? What happens to that wound? Yeah, go ahead and say a little louder. It's good. Yeah, it'll fester. It gets infected, bugs come, and it just gets worse, and then eventually it takes over and it kills it. If we hide that sin, if we don't look into that, what is it in us that we tend to sin, that we tend to do wrong, that trips us up? If we don't look into that, it continues to grow and get worse. And so we need to bring that to light. We need to take off the mask, bring that to light. Unfortunately, sometimes there is the image of God in us that should shine out, but we don't necessarily, we're not comfortable with it. It makes others uncomfortable, whether it's telling, sometimes it's telling the truth. And so we hide that. We put on a mask and we hide that part of us. That needs to be out there as well. God needs, the church needs your personality, who he created you to be. So authenticity, went a little too far. This is kind of our outline. What is authenticity? Why should we be authentic? And then fight for authenticity. And that's, there is, as I got into this, I realized there is so much about authenticity, about how to be authentic. You know, what is, that we should try, there's certain things that we should try to be as a Christian. And we, it's easy just to say, well, that's not me, so I don't have to be that. No, we need to, as we expose ourselves to Christ, he will take us in that direction. And it's kind of this mysterious thing of Christ will make you that, but you also have to work at it as well. But there's also, like, you know, what happens is you're taking off mask, is suddenly you realize that who I really am is, I'm kind of a jerk. Should I be authentic? Should I just respond very straightforward to people? And, well, that was stupid. No, the purpose is to take off and to let Christ change us to be more loving. So, but there's all kinds of parts about authenticity. I want to focus really on the last one, is our fight for authenticity, allowing people to feel safe to be authentic and to work at this. Unlike some of these other words, discipleship and mission and ambassadorship, reconciliation, mission, did I say mission? Yeah. We can find all of them in the Bible pretty easily, and you can kind of do studies on them. The word word authenticity, I couldn't find in, well, NIV and even King James. And so kind of looking for some other words for it. Let's look at Romans 12, 1 through 10. We're not going to read all of those. These are the three verses I kind of picked out. If you could read with me verse 3. I'm going to start with verse 1. Read with me verse 3. Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of worship. For by the grace given me, I say to every one of you, do not think of yourself more highly than you ought, but rather think of yourself with sober judgment in accordance with the measure of faith God has given you. And it goes on to say later, love must be sincere. Honor others above yourself. So we see sincere kind of talks about authenticity there, but we're going to see explore something else is there as well. Read with me I'll read Acts 2, 44 to 46. This was kind of the beginning of the church when they first got Holy Spirit had come. They're kind of new and were excited about being together. All the believers were together and had everything in common. They broke bread in their homes and together with glad and sincere hearts. So there again, we see this idea of sincerity, being sincere, saying what you mean. Read with me Genesis 2:25. And this would have been, is that the creation? It's kind of before sin came into the world, when Adam and Eve could be authentic. If you could read this with me. The man and his wife were both naked, and they felt no shame. All right, so that's kind of a fun picture, I think, of authenticity, or funny, at least. Authenticity. I'm going to start, actually, this is kind of down here, sincere hearts, that idea, and in Romans 12:3, where it talked about, verse 3, think of yourself with sober judgment. We sometimes get trapped in the first part of this verse. Do not think of yourself more highly than you ought. And we think, oh, yeah, don't think of yourself. Don't focus on yourself. We need to be humble. We need to think about others first. And I mean, it even says that, others above yourself. But we miss this think of yourself with sober judgment. We need to consider ourselves. We need to consider what am I good at and be honest about that. We need to consider what often trips me up. What are things that kind of tempt me? I need to be aware of that so that I can avoid that. Think of yourself with sober judgment. Sincerity. We talked about just saying what you mean. But naked and unashamed, I think this is a very clear, vivid picture of what authenticity is. Because when you start taking off clothes, there's very much shame quickly comes with that. Especially as we are in summer, and you know, you have the the beach body thing going on. You're trying to be ready for that. I also like this because kids show this very well. Or maybe at least my kids do. If you're at the wedding yesterday, or you drive by our house at any time of the day, there is something. They go out, and it takes about 2 seconds for me to turn around, and they are without clothes. Does anybody else struggle with that with their kids of like 2 to 6? I'm hoping 6 is kind of where it start change. I don't know. I have nephews and nieces. My sisters and my cousins, they put things up on Facebook. You know, it's like, you know, well, I heard something I never thought I'd hear. So it's naked time at our house. And I said, this does not come from the parents. Like, this isn't something we teach them. They just do it. And they are joyful about it, and they love it. I don't understand. But it's beautiful in a way. And it's not just clothes. It is their words as well. You know, kids say the darndest things. So here's a few notes that they write that are a little bit unapologetically straightforward. Dear Miss McMahon, I guess, you are a good teacher, but you're not my most favorite. What a beautiful note. All right. Similar up here to Mommy. You know, Mommy, I love you sometimes. Sorry, that got kind of cut off. I love you sometimes. Very honest. Okay. Down here, Mom and Dad, you are lucky to be alive. I have no idea what that child was thinking when they wrote that. And if I was that parent, I'd be afraid to go to sleep at night. but it is true. We are. Okay. This one here. It is, I love you with all my butt. It says, I would have said heart, but my butt is bigger. That makes sense. So, and they can say that because they're kids, and it's beautiful, and it's cute, and you understand what they're saying. They can be authentic. They can be, and I think even with Adam and Eve, that nakedness and unashamed, I mean, it was with each other, but it was with God as well. And we recently we are asking for your questions, and you ask for it. And one of the questions was actually to preach on Song of Solomon, and the thing was to bring drama into the bedroom. All right, so here's a little, well, I don't know that we're going there, but here's a little bit of a taste of that. Okay, Adam and Eve were naked and unashamed. And I think that meant more than just that they didn't have any clothes on and they didn't care. I think they were completely open to each other. I think they didn't hide any secrets. And so here, if you want to take drama into the bedroom, your spouse, your relationship with your spouse should be the most authentic one that you have, besides with God. You need to know each other. You need to be asking questions and constantly talking. And it doesn't have to, you can't just go home now and you say, all right, let's be authentic with each other. Tell me your deepest and darkest secret. Boom. I mean, that's a great question, great conversation starter. Start with questions of what's your favorite color? You may think you know it, but I've learned it doesn't hurt to check in once in a while. It helps when you're buying gifts later as well. But, favorite color and why, it kind of changes. I've learned that, Sarah has a favorite color that she likes to see, but she also has a favorite color that she likes to wear. There's reasons for it, and it goes deeper, and you learn so much about somebody just with a simple question of what's your favorite color? How do you like your coffee or tea, or what's your favorite drink in the morning? Ask these questions, and then listen, but also, be willing to share yourself. And you may think, here's a challenging one, this is what Sarah and I struggled with in the beginning. I guess I could take off a mask because I'm kind of being authentic right now. I was like, what movie do you want to see? And we would often, wanting to please the other person, we just, well, I don't know, whatever you want to watch. Well, we both say, I don't know, whatever you want to watch. And C.S. Lewis, if you've been listening, some of the youth are getting together and we read Screwtape Letters. He actually talks about this a little bit. It's something, the Screwtape Letters, sorry, this is a little bit off, but is a kind of superior demon writing letters to a demon who's like a personal demon trying to tempt somebody. And he says, the best thing you can do is to get them to have false unselfishness. And so that looks like this, is when we want to see a movie. Like, I may want to see the latest Avengers that just came out. But Sarah wants to see... No, and there's reasons for that. But yeah, it could be the somebody said the shack. But that's really disturbing just because a kid gets kidnapped. When I see stuff like that, I have to hold Atticus tight for a long time. All right, I'm really being authentic. So there you go. There's another one. but Sarah wants to see something else. But I try to say, what would Sarah want to say? Oh, let's go watch The Suffragette. Let's go watch that, even though I had no interest. I actually did want to see it, and I did watch it, and it was good. But anyway, let's say, she thinks, oh, no, Eric wants to watch The Avengers. And so we end up arguing. I'm like, no, let's go see The Suffragette. She's like, no, we should go see The Avengers. You want to watch it. In actuality, I really don't want to see The Avengers. And so in the end, we both end up going to see a movie that neither of us really want to watch, and we both go feeling like, well, I was unselfish. Now they owe me, all right? And that is something, if it's a way of putting on masks, it creates division. Instead of if we could just come together and say, what do you want to go see? Well, I really don't have a strong feeling, but I think I'd rather go see this. And the other person would say, oh, that's interesting. I'd like to go see this. And then we have a conversation and we figure out, okay, where I want to go. So be authentic with one another. All right, so there's drama in the bedroom or just in your home is a good thing. All right, but the last one is to be authentic. It's impossible by ourselves because we have started putting on the mask. And as that quote said earlier, Frederick Buchner, is that we forget who we are on the inside. We have so many masks that we don't know where the mask stops and our own shimmering personality is. So we need God to show that to us. We have blind spots. And so I love this, the Psalm 139. And I think this is, we're going to say it a couple times this morning yet. But please read this with me. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there is any offensive way in me. Being authentic is that, I think, very simple definition is basically asking God, God, please take off my masks. Here I am. Show me who you want me to be. If there's any anxious thoughts, if there are anything offensive in me, please take it away and change it. So why be authentic? Hopefully you've seen some of the reasons already. But James 5:16, I think, points to another one. It says, therefore, confess your sins to each other and pray for each other so that you may be healed. The prayer of a righteous person is powerful and effective. So why be authentic? It's so we can be healed. It's also not, it's we can say, yeah, I want to be authentic with God. That's what that prayer is. You know, God, I want you to know me. But God is saying, you need each other as well. You need to expose your sin. You need to expose your beauty to other people. Here it's talking about sins, and there's something very healthy when we have somebody else and we can say, I have sinned, I struggled with this, and they can say, they'll just be there with you and say, I still love you. Let's pray for that. Let's pray for you to move beyond this, and to even say the words, you are forgiven. Something very healthy about that we need to do. So why are we authentic? It's to be healed. It's also to worship God, going back to Romans 12. It says, you offer yourself, your bodies, as a living sacrifice. This is your spiritual act of worship. So to worship God, we kind of need to know who we are. We need to learn how to take off the mask. Make sure that worshiping God in itself isn't a mask. You think about here when we're worshiping in music. David asked, how many of you like hymns? How many of you like worship songs? You know, the act of raising your hands to God, that can be out of your authentic self, and it can also be a mask. And so we have to really worship, and that's between you and God, but you have to, who am I? How is God leading me to worship? What do I need to do? So we need to peel off the mask so we can worship God, and also to build Christ's body, to build the church. Romans 12 goes on to say there after it says, consider yourself with sober judgment, is because then each person is a part of the body. It's like we have an arm, we have a leg, we have a toe, we have an eye, a nose, a mouth. And in 1 Corinthians 12, it kind of mirrors this writing. And he says that, you know, if the nose said, oh, I want to be an eye, well, then we couldn't smell things. And so if you are trying to fill another place, trying to be something else, you're putting on a mask to try to be something else, that means that what you were supposed to do, what God created you to do, is not being done. And the church is missing out, and you're missing out. And so we need to learn, even when it's good things, sometimes there's a time, God exposed this, what do I need to do? I need to take that off, and then I can live where you want me to be. So there's sin, we need to be authentic about our sin. We also need to be authentic about even what God has created us, our gifts, our joys. Sorry, I skipped a page here. This is the thing with a mask. It kind of becomes hard to see things and even think. Another reason we need to take them off. Well, here's an opportunity to take one off. To be authentic is to risk. Here we're going to refer back to that analogy of nakedness being authentic, in that it's, you know, summertime, the whole beach body epidemic of everybody, you know, we need to look good so I can take my shirt off and go swimming. I'm going to come forward and be authentic about something, in that I struggle with that because I have a little bit of vanity in me. God has blessed me for, I grew up on a farm, so I worked a lot, and I actually, here's all my pride coming out. You ready for this? I actually looked pretty good without a shirt on when I was younger, and I tried to keep that up, and I tried to keep my muscles looking good, and, you know, the more people complimented me about that, I just, like, you know, I wanted it more, and I've tried to keep that, and I knew it, you know, after 35, it was starting to get a lot harder. And I realized how much harder it was. On Wednesday, we went to the pool, and it was a bunch of kids, so I thought, I'm okay. You know, these are the fifth and lower grades. You know, they don't care about this. They don't really notice this. Well, I was going to get in the pool, and one very authentic little girl just looked up at me and said, Pastor K, where'd all your muscle go? So there's a risk. You know, there's a risk. Now, that wasn't very big of a risk. I mean, I kind of know where I'm at, and it made me not eat much that day, and I'm going to work out some more. But see, okay, there again, we can look back, you know, it was good. It was a lot easier for me to want to stay fit when I was a lifeguard, and that's kind of who I was. You know, I could look down all the time, like, okay, I need to work on that. But we put clothes on, we start to cover up, it's harder to live authentically. Let's move past that. But to be really authentic is to risk. And for some people, it is a much higher risk than others. The amount of risk that we face is inversely related to the amount of power we have. This comes from David, I think it's Galinsky, who is a social psychologist. He studies basically what gives people the courage, or what makes people step out and say something to speak up. And he's discovered that there is this, it's how much power we have. So how do we have power? Or what is power? When we think that other people share a similar experience to us, our power goes up. The more people that we think share are similar to us, our power goes up. Also, if we think that what we have to say is beneficial or we have something unique to offer, our power goes up. So how this works is... I'm pretty sure I'm not alone with being a little bit self-conscious about how I look without a shirt on. And so it's actually my risk in sharing that, because I know there's a lot of other people that can, you know, are familiar with that. They know what that feels like. My risk went down. So I can share that, and it was funny, and it's okay. However, when we think we're alone, our power goes down and our risk goes up. If we think that nobody is going to understand what I have to say. So we see this with some parts of our population. Oh, please tell me I didn't do this. Oh, there it is. Some parts of our population, different things we either struggle with or different, even our identity, that either people think we're alone, and so I won't share, or I have nothing good to offer. I know how people are going to respond to me, and it's not good, so I'm not going to share. When people feel they're alone and people feel they have nothing to share. They get into a thing called a low power double bind, which means if I speak out, I'm going to be punished, so I'm not going to speak out. However, if I don't speak out, I'm going to be ignored and I just keep suffering the same thing again and again. And it just keeps getting worse and worse. Depression. I hope this is changing. Depression used to be one of those things that we think, I am alone. I know growing up, it was much more like this in our community of if you're depressed, then something is wrong. You don't have enough faith. You know, if you would just pray and have enough faith, God would heal you and you wouldn't suffer with depression. You could be happy. You could get out of it. And so we don't talk about it in the church because we think I have to, and nobody else is suffering from it. I come to church and everybody's happy. They're smiling. They're laughing. They're joking. You ask them how they are and they say, I'm great. I'm fine. God was so good to me. Or they show a little bit of authenticity and they say, well, you know, I had a bad week. And they kind of, you know, they lift up and they reveal another mask. But, you know, God was good and he got me through it. But we've started, hopefully, to be talking about, started talking about depression and that I'm not alone. When I'm blue, I can't, it's hard for me to get out of bed. It's hard for me to find a reason. There are other people that struggle with this. It's not because you don't have enough faith. It is just, it's a lot of different things. If you want to learn more about that, you can go talk to the Richards over here, Doug and Morgan, or another counselor or other people. But it's not, you're not alone if that's what you're struggling with. We need to hear your voice. You need to share that. Divorce used to be one of those topics that if I fail in a marriage, if I do that, then I am lost. I have nothing offered to the church. The church did a bad job at a time of just saying, like, no, you can't do certain things if you've done this. And it kind of lowers our worth, and we start to feel less powerful. We can't share it, so we hide things. We hide what we struggle with. Abuse, either whether it be rape or just ongoing sexual or emotional abuse. We didn't mean to. But I think even in the best of intentions with the purity culture of saying, you know, you should remain a virgin until marriage, we've started to make that if you're not, then you are less than. You have something to be ashamed of. And while, yes, purity at marriage, you know, having sexual intercourse only in marriage between one man and one woman is God's ideal, it's not your fault if you're abused. It's not your fault if somebody takes advantage of you. You should not feel shame for that. You should be able to come out and say, this is wrong. It should not happen. The abuser should feel shame. They're the ones that we should work with. But we need to make sure that in the church that we're providing a place where people can come out and say, I'm suffering from this. And that we walk along with them. We don't start thinking like, oh, poor you. You're a little less than now. You're not quite as pure. Long grief, it's a very difficult one. Is that when we have something, sometimes, you know, people can move through grief healthily and they are okay. And they say, God has me. There are other times that for whatever reason, grief lasts longer. But we're afraid to say that because we know, we feel like I should be over this by now. It's been 5 years since somebody close to me died, since I lost this job, since whatever it would be. And so we start to hide that I am suffering in long grief. And we need to share that with others. We need people that can walk alongside. I will stay in this pit. I will grieve with you until you are done. God is here with us. He's crying with us. He's going to walk with us out of this. There's others up there. You know, trauma in the church. Questions that we have that we feel it's not safe to ask. Because either we have as a people, or we even see it on, well, Facebook is a horrible place for this, but where we just loudly proclaim something. Either I am against this, everybody who does this is wrong in this way. And so we know if I share this, if I'm having a question about this, I'm going to be judged, I'm going to be condemned. So we need to be careful about what we stand up strongly for about that. If we are making people feel like I can't come out. Gender is one that where there was an inequality of power. I'd like to read something quick that kind of demonstrates this, I think, this low power double bind. This comes from a century and a half ago, there was a Church of the Brethren. They were debating whether women could vote. And this was a time when women couldn't vote, and they were saying, maybe we should. But in that, women couldn't even speak. They couldn't get up and talk in annual conference to give, like, why they should be able to. And so several men stood up and gave a statement. It said, in 1881, during a debate regarding women's right to vote, several men expressed concern that they, as women, they are not allowed to vote on any matter, but we, their lords, assume the authority to make rules to bind them, and they dare not open their mouths in helping to decide these rules. So they couldn't speak out, because if they did, they were saying, you are stepping out of line, you're not allowed to speak. But if they stay where they're at, they just continue to lose their voice. They did not get the right to vote then. And so they started to work in other ways. They started gathering goods for missions and supporting that. But they didn't have a man in that group to lead them. And so this article came to annual conference a few years later. In 1886, when Standing Committee was acting to shut down a group of women who had begun meeting to raise money and awareness for missions and other community projects, Brother S.Z. Sharp spoke up. If we pass this paper and place those restrictions upon them, we do it most reluctantly. And we feel it injustice to our dear sisters that we must say something. We have silenced them in the congregation. We have silenced them in annual meeting. That is that they no longer have the voice that they once had. We do not allow them to preach the gospel in the name of the church, and they, feeling a desire to do something for the master, have formed themselves into a missionary band in different places and endeavor to do something for the master, meaning God. If we pass this paper, and don't allow them to do that, if we pass this paper as it is, we take away from them the last opportunity they have in laboring for the master, as they seem to think they ought to. Inasmuch as they have no voice in the matter, as they cannot defend themselves, I feel to espouse their cause so much as to say this much on their behalf. He said, I feel like I need to speak up, and saying they are trying, we have silenced them when they're not being given a voice in how they worship God. It took years after that to slowly move until women were more given a voice in the Church of the Brethren. We started to hear and we realized a lot of the beauty that they can bring to us when we're not hiding it. The last one I know is a little bit, very, or actually not a little, it's very controversial, the LGBTQ community. And I wanted to address it because I feel like it is very pertinent to how we respond as a church. The Church of the Brethren addressed this in 1985 in a paper about human sexuality. And I mean, they said, and they still hold to it, is that it is God's ideal for marriage is a man between one man and one woman. However, we need to make sure that we are loving people where they're at. That nobody should suffer abuse or neglect or hate because of where they're at or what they're struggling with or what they're doing. And so they encouraged us to reach out and to form relationships with people so that we could listen to them, walk alongside them, understand where they're at. It did not say that we have to condone it, and by doing that, by stepping out and say, it's okay. They're saying we need to walk through them with that. When we stand out loudly against something, we lower their power and we raise their risk, and they're never going to say something. And so what has happened, and is what, I mean, happened with women as well, but I think with LGBTQ, is they started banding together. So I can't speak there because I'm judged, I'm condemned. We start coming together, finding other people similar to us, and I'll speak out, and it comes out angry, and it comes out loud. And so they have a different voice, but it's created a divide. As a church, we need to be a place that is safe, where we see people that don't have a voice, and we make it safe for them to share, so that we can bridge this gap, so it's not us against them. It's like, tell me your story. What are you suffering with? Let's walk together with this. Let's explore this together. Okay. To be authentic is to risk, and boundaries are very important. And I'm going to skip through this. There's a lot to know about who do I open up to? Because it can be, we can say, I want to be authentic. Who do I find to be authentic? Are we supposed to just come to church and then we should have a time of just, okay, come and confess your sins so we can be healed? And I don't think so. I think church should be a place where we can find those relationships, that we can be open with one another. Not everybody is ready to hear every story, and you need to be aware of who they are. Because if you share your story with the wrong person, even a loving person, a Christian person who wants to help but is not ready for it, they can turn in unwittingly even, but even sometimes on purpose, turn what you share into another piece of flying debris in an already dangerous storm. That comes from Brené Brown, who's probably the foremost researcher of shame and kind of trying to be authentic. So who do we share with? I'll put up this next slide, but I'm going to summarize it basically in that you need to find somebody that loves you no matter what. Not despite, and this sounds a little weird but they don't love you despite your hang-ups and your wrongs. They love you with them. It's not saying, I don't know how to explain that more. You sharing something with them is not going to change the amount that they love you. We need to strive to be that person that will enter in with somebody and say, I love you no matter what. This is more what to do. But this takes time. It's not, you can't just find somebody and you start to make a connection. You're like, this is what I struggle with. I'm kind of naturally an open person. I can do that a little bit because as a white man, I have a lot of power. I'm encouraged to kind of be out and there and loud and bold and share who I am. But I overshare. I've done this in other relationships. I started to get to know somebody as a boss, and he seemed to be like, oh, I can share it. I shared everything. And it changed our relationship, and as a boss, it started to come back, and it did become that piece of flying debris, and it was the beginning of the end of our relationship. Just comments from later came back. It changed how he saw me as an employee. So you have to be careful. I want you to know that as you're seeking to be authentic yourself, but also as you seek to try to make space for people to be authentic. You need to be honest with them, be safe place for them. All right, so you need to know each other. It takes time. You listen with your emotions. Let's walk through this together. Try to feel what they're feeling. Try to take time and just listen and let it sit. You don't have to have an immediate response. It's okay to be silent and say, wow, I can't imagine that. I love you. Let me walk through this with you. If you do, and realize we're not perfect, we do revert to a bad answer at sometimes. If we make a mistake, be willing to go back and apologize. Say, I'm sorry. I didn't know how to handle it at that point. I responded very quickly. Please allow me another chance. What would you like me to do? What can I do for you? Is that what it says? I can't. Oh, I added that after these notes. So, like I said, masks make it hard. Why do you ask? When somebody asks a question of like, what do you think about divorce and remarriage? Usually, there's a deeper question in that. You know, why do you ask? Well, my father's going through this. My mother's going through this. My son's going through this. And it makes it more personal, and you realize why. And it's not just a knowledge question. It's a heart question. And can I pray for you at the appropriate time? As it says, prayer is a powerful and effective tool. It heals. Unfortunately, in the church, we can use prayer as a mask. When we say, I'm not comfortable with this, and we just say quickly, like, wow, let me pray for you. And kind of like, let's hold you out there. Make sure that the prayer is after you've sat with them a little bit. Like, this is so hard. Can I pray with you? The church, I think, should be a place where anyone can feel safe sharing their spiritual journey and start healing. Like I said, we should be an area where it is safe for people can come and say, I will be loved no matter what. And in this area, in the worship, the bigger areas, they can find then smaller groups, they can find somebody who they can be more authentic with. I pray that we as a church can do that. So how are... how are we as a church doing at that? Are we providing space where people can be authentic? Are we providing a place where they say, this is where you can come to ask questions? How are you, in your life, providing a place that people can be authentic with you? How are you searching to be authentic? Because really, to be in a place where you can be that for somebody else, you need to be authentic yourself. Are you making play? Are you being authentic with somebody? Are you being authentic with God? In closing, please join me in this prayer of Psalm 139. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there is any offensive way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. Join me in prayer. God, we yearn, I believe, to be authentic. I think the world is searching for ways to be authentic. We see it in movies. We see it in the self-help sections of ways that we can be authentic and real with one another. There's a joy that comes with that. Lord, the exciting thing is the church should have the answer in you. You are the way that we can truly be authentic and realize the strength and beauty that you have created in us. But Lord, there is, along with that strength and beauty and gifts, there is shame and mistakes and a dark side to us that we need to be aware of. I pray that as we pray this prayer, that you would seek it out. We could really, and it's going to be a slow process of opening our hearts. And it's going to be reveal one thing here, and it might, we have to work on that for a month, a year, a decade, and then there might be something else. I pray that you would lead us in that journey, as uncomfortable as it is. Help us as a church to surround people walking in that they can feel safe in sharing as you expose each of us for the beautiful image that you created in us. In your name I pray.